Aidan Delgado, Iraq War veteran, recently spoke in Ann Arbor about his time in Iraq and in Abu Ghraib prison, using a slideshow of photos.
Some of Delgado's descriptions are very graphic.
Hi everybody, my name's Aidan Joshua Delgado, I'm 24 years old, and I'm a veteran of the Second Iraq War. Most of the guys in my unit had never left the United States. Certainly they'd never been to the Middle East. So they lived in a state of complete culture shock all the time. And as a result, they were terrified of the Iraqis. You know, I never heard Iraqis referred to as Iraqis while I was there. It was always Haji this and Haji that. Haji is the current anti-Arabic, anti-Muslim slang being used today. It's very, very prevalent in the military. It's derived from an Arabic word, Haji, which means one who's been on the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, which is one of the pillars of Islam. But in English usage, in the soldiers' parlance, it has the exact same connotation as gook or Charlie or nigger, and that's exactly how it's used. And it becomes such a part of the atmosphere that had gotten into our paperwork and had become part of the bureaucracy. People don't really like to talk about racism in the military or poor behavior, you know, because that's our boys, you know, and it represents us. But the reality was, a lot of guys did things there that I know they wouldn't have back home. In one instance, an Army Master Sergeant, one of the highest enlisted ranks, had been walking through Nasiriyah, and a crowd of children about that age surrounded him and started bothering him for food, water, candy, in the way that kids often do. And instead of replying to them, he reached into the back of the Humvee and picked up a detached steel Humvee antenna, which is one of those bars bent across the bottom of the screen. And he lashed these children with this steel bar in front of like a dozen of us. And honestly, nobody moved, you know, nobody reacted. We'd become so blasé at this point that it had become kind of the routine and the norm. The fact was that most of the guys in the unit had been stewing in anti-Arab, anti-Muslim sentiment since 2001. And these sentiments found expression in Iraq, first in the way they treated the corpses of people who had been killed, later in the way they handled civilians they came in contact with, and ultimately how they treated prisoners when they were under their thumb at Abu Ghraib prison.
Delgado spoke about the months he spent in service at Abu Ghraib prison.
Abu Ghraib wasn't like a U.S. prison. It wasn't like a cluster of buildings. It was almost like a city unto itself. It was several square kilometers on each side. And we housed about 4,000 to 6,000 prisoners inside who lived outside in barbed wire enclosures. The detainees were housed in canvas tents, about 60 to 70 prisoners per tent, set on a wooden floor with a pit or a slit trench for sanitation, hemmed in by barbed wire. The conditions inside the camp were very shocking to me. I'd always thought the U.S. Army was like the apex of professionalism. When I got there, I found that we had a very large problem with communicable diseases. If the prisoners didn't have a communicable disease, they soon did. We also had a big problem with dysentery inside, because the food being served the Iraqi prisoners wasn't from the U.S. Army stores. It had been subcontracted from a Baghdad food service. And when it arrived, it would be rotting or would have rats or cockroaches inside, and the prisoners would get dysentery after they ate it. When I arrived at Abu Ghraib, honestly, I thought that this was a necessary evil. I looked around at these horrible conditions and I thought, well, you know, it's bad, but maybe it's necessary. Maybe these are the people trying to kill us. You know, these are the most dangerous people in Iraq. That's what I thought when I first came to Abu Ghraib. But working there, I actually got a chance to find out differently. I was shocked to find that the vast majority of people in Abu Ghraib were there for petty theft, public drunkenness, and forged coalition documents. In addition, a large percentage of the people inside Abu Ghraib had been put there having committed no offense at all. We had a policy of random sweeps, which meant that every time the base would come under fire from the outside, we'd send out military police forces, sweep up all the men in the area, bring them into Abu Ghraib for questioning. We'd question them and find out they were innocent. But the process of release was so bureaucratic that it would often take upwards of 6 months for prisoners to be released from Abu Ghraib, having only been brought in for questioning. So when I found this out about who these prisoners were and what they were doing inside Abu Ghraib, I found it impossible to square that knowledge with the treatment they were receiving. And I began to feel a strong revulsion for what was going on in Abu Ghraib and for what my unit was involved in. One particular incident, there was a prisoner who had smuggled in a pistol and shot one of our guards in the chest. The guard had been wearing his hard ballistic plates, so the bullet didn't penetrate. He kind of knocked him down and took the wind out of him. In retaliation, the guards shot that prisoner in the legs with a shotgun and broke both of his legs below the knee. They then took him to Baghdad for treatment. Instead of loading him on a stretcher, they dragged him on the shattered sort of mass of his legs out of his prison cell and up into a truck. They threw him in the back of it. And this was a big guy. He was like 300 pounds. And they made him kneel on the sort of mass of his shattered legs in his underwear. And it was freezing cold outside. My sergeant was driving the truck. And my sergeant turned and said, "You know, this guy's not going to survive. It's freezing cold outside, and he has two broken legs. He won't survive the transit to Baghdad." You know, clearly that prisoner was a dangerous guy. He had smuggled in a weapon. He had shot one of the guards. I'm not disputing that he was dangerous and needed to be controlled. What I criticize is the extra additional brutality, the cruelty that wasn't necessary. And that's really what began to turn my stomach about Abu Ghraib.
Delgado found himself disgusted with conditions at Abu Ghraib. He began to identify with the prisoners. This led him to apply for conscientious objector status.
When I looked across the barbed wire at these guys, I looked at them and I said, man, these are young, poor, uneducated guys who didn't have a lot of options back home. I looked to my right to the guys in my unit and I said, man, we're exactly the same. I was trying to see if there was any way I could live with myself being in the military. And ultimately, I decided that I couldn't, that I could not be the kind of Buddhist, I couldn't be the kind of man that I wanted to be. So I went to my commander, I turned in my weapon, I said, look, I'll stay, I'll do whatever you order me to, I'll work as a mechanic, but you can just take this weapon back, because I'm not going to fight and I'm not going to kill. I want to be processed as a conscientious objector.
Delgado officially began the process of becoming a conscientious objector, but had to remain in Abu Ghraib until his term of service was up. During this time, he faced harassment and ostracization from his officers and former friends. It was not until long after he had returned home that he became officially recognized as a conscientious objector.
Compounding the physical conditions was the interaction between the guards and the prisoners, which was uniformly very harsh and very brutal. But the situation had been worsened by the fact that most of the guards here had not been trained to do corrections. In late November, the tensions inside the prison camp had reached a boiling point. The prisoners had torn up their tents and were marching around, chanting slogans and holding up banners in protest of their living conditions. They were tired of the cold weather and their lack of cold weather clothing, the quality of food being served them, which, as I said, would be rotting or would have parasites, and actually not being allowed to use tobacco was one of their main grievances. The demonstration became very unruly. The prisoners picked up stones and pieces of wood from the floor and began throwing them at the guards. They hit one of the guards in the face. He was a friend of mine. He got kind of a cut on his nose. In response, the military tried to quell the disturbance with non-lethal rounds, but it didn't work, and they had mixed lethal and non-lethal rounds in their weapons. They then requested permission to use lethal force, and they got it. The battalion gave the command, and they opened fire on the prisoners. They shot 12 of them, and they killed 4 of them. 3 died immediately, and 1 died later of his wounds. So our unit was tasked with transporting the bodies of the prisoners who had been killed in the November 24th demonstration. They were to be taken to mortuary affairs to be cleaned up and returned to their families. But before doing that, the soldiers on the detail diverted the truck to an open field in Abu Ghraib and stopped to pose with and mutilate the bodies of the people they had killed.
Delgado showed the audience a photo taken by men in his unit. The photograph showed one soldier posed with corpses of Iraqi civilians, while other soldiers looked on and flashed the thumbs-up sign. The photograph was reminiscent of lynching photos taken in the U.S. around the turn of the 20th century.
This is a member of my unit scooping out the previous detainee's brains with a plastic MRE spoon, while 4 other soldiers look on and 2 take photographs. This is the reality. A lot of the soldiers there had no respect for the Iraqis when they were alive, and certainly they had no respect for them when they were dead. And this was really quite an all-too-common practice. And people would have you believe that Abu Ghraib was the work of a few bad apples. But I really don't buy it, because it was going on in my unit, it was going on in other units, it was going on in the South, it was going on in Qasr. It was going on prolifically throughout the military, and it was such a culture and an atmosphere that I really don't buy it when they say, oh, it's just a few bad apples, a few crackers from West Virginia.
I'm Megan Williamson.
And I'm Betsy Palazzola for Black Box Radio.